Beyond war funding, the White House has been pressuring Capitol Hill on several fronts, including health care reform and the Supreme Court nomination of Sonia Sotomayor. For more on this and other political developments this week, we're joined by our regular political commentators, E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post and the Brookings Institution, and David Brooks of The New York Times. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Now, before we get to the specific issues at the heart of this, what you could call a full court zone defense that the White House seems to be using to work over Capitol Hill, I want to ask you about their strategy for working the other end of Pennsylvania Avenue. What are they doing differently, and what do they seem to have learned from previous administrations? E.J.?
Well, first of all, the White House might as well have a sign on it that says the Congress lives here. The president's a former senator. Joe Biden's a former senator. The vice president, Rahm Emanuel, was a leading figure in the House. David Axelrod, the senior advisor, as a consultant, helped elect a lot of people who are on Capitol Hill. So the links are very close. But I also think that the Democrats in Congress don't get credit enough for having put together the most coherent, disciplined group of Democrats they've had, I think, since 1965. Now, some of that's a commentary on how undisciplined they were in the Carter and Clinton years. But when you look at the record this year, they've actually gotten a lot of things done. You know, from the stimulus to children's health care to regulating tobacco. And it looks very likely that Judge Sotomayor is going to get confirmed. And I, for one, think they're going to pass health care. So I think they're dealing with a pretty good situation among Democrats, relatively speaking. And they have a lot of understanding of how the Hill works inside the White House.
David, what about the Republicans, though? The White House seems to be using a combination of muscle and campaign mixers to try to reach out to them.
Well, there's a lot of contact. I've had Republican senators tell me they've spent more time talking to President Obama than they did to President Bush. And so I think they feel wanted and consulted. So that's a good thing. There are substantive issues, of course, where there are differences. But I would say that the main problem they have is not the Republicans, who are more or less on the sidelines. It is the Democrats. And in my take, the Democrats on Capitol Hill have promoted a lot of populist, to me, narrow and kind of stupid ideas, like not allowing Gitmo prisoners into the U.S., like trying to get too heavy onto executive pay. And the general posture of the administration has been restraint, accepting the political necessity of what's out there, the not-in-my-backyard activity, but trying to make it as palatable and as responsible as possible. The big issues, as E.J. suggested, are health care and cap and trade. And there the administration sort of handed things over to Congress and now getting more heavily involved.
Well, we'll get to cap and trade in another discussion, but let's focus for now on health care. The president was in Green Bay this week. He said that the nation can't afford to wait. The time to push for health care reform is right now. He said that Americans, if they like their doctor, can stay with their doctor, but he did push for this idea of a public plan. Is he going to be able to win enough support among Democrats, let alone Republicans, to push for this?
The public plan is going to come out of, is going to be in the House version of this bill. The question is what comes out of the Senate. The idea floated this week by Senator Kent Conrad to create health care cooperatives as an alternative to the public plan, I think has a lot of appeal inside the White House. It won't satisfy the public plan people because what they really want is a test of whether government insurance can be more efficient and cheaper than private insurance. But on its own, I think it could be a very popular idea among Democrats and also among Republicans. So I think that idea has a future, but I think that Democrats are going to hold out as long as they can to get a public plan in there.
David, are the co-ops a viable point for compromise?
It all depends on how it works out. If the public plan is subsidized, so it has an unfair advantage over the private plans, then most moderate Democrats and all Republicans will be against it, and it will not pass. It's a question of the details. I happen to think the costs are the big barrier, and I'm much more pessimistic that health care will pass this year than I was 2 or 3 months ago, because I think they have not figured out how to pay for the $500 billion, whatever the gap is going to be. The way they're all reaching for it is taxing employee health benefits. They're surely going to do that. The question, do you only impose a cost on the rich, which would be politically popular but would not get you the revenue, or do you raise taxes on the middle class and thus violate one of President Obama's campaign promises?
Before I let the two of you go, there was a lot of anticipation about this week's gubernatorial primary in the state of Virginia because it might provide clues about the mood of the voters, about the direction of both parties, particularly the GOP. What do we learn in this election?
We learned that it's very hard for somebody with a lot of money to come into a state that they didn't have a long history in. That would be Terry McAuliffe. And there was a kind of backlash against McAuliffe, and partly because of a Washington Post endorsement, partly because Brian Moran, the third candidate, and McAuliffe went at each other. Cree Deeds, a moderate Democrat from sort of a rural part of the state, won the primary overwhelmingly. I think the White House is very happy because he's a Democrat with the best chance to win.
And are moderate Democrats like that still, do they hold appeal for Republican voters?
Yeah, I think they do, and Virginia is the sort of place where they hold appeal. The big message to me is that God must exist, because Terry McAuliffe, to me, is one of the most partisan, unattractive political figures in the country. And the fact that Virginia voters, Democratic Virginia voters, did not want somebody who's so hyper-partisan, but wanted somebody who's more commonsensical and can bridge divides, is another sign of the good faith of the American people.
That's David Brooks of The New York Times and E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post and the Brookings Institution. I hope you both have a glorious weekend. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Too.